Today is a food show here on KCUR's Central Standard, and when the critics arrive very shortly, we'll start our search for exquisite noodle dishes at Kansas City restaurants. But first, we've got a quick lesson in preparing trout. People think of fish as something best enjoyed near the ocean, but we do have local fish in our lakes and rivers, and trout is something you can really find pretty easily around here. In fact, the fishing lakes in town are regularly stocked with trout. But what do you do with it once you catch it? I'm Gina Kaufman, joined now by Martin Heuser, the chef and owner at Afare. They serve trout that reminds him of his childhood in Germany. Martin, good morning.
Good morning, Gina. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. So wait, there is such a thing as trout season in the springtime, right?
Yeah, there's a trout season in the state parks from March to 11. And there's also all-year trout season in all the other rivers and lakes. But the trout is actually not native to Missouri.
It's not native.
No, it was shipped in by rail from Colorado and California. And there's a lot of hatcheries down in the Ozarks, and the trout does very well in the Ozarks, but they unfortunately don't reproduce. So we need the hatcheries and then restock the rivers and the lakes in Missouri.
And it's trout season right now?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
You grew up with trout in Germany.
Yes.
Tell me about how you and your family enjoyed that fish.
Yeah. Yeah, my dad was an avid fisherman and in Germany, so we fished the Rhine, and he also was part of a fishing club. So he woke me and my brother up like 3 a.m. We drove for 2 hours and we started fishing.
This
and
sounds very Midwestern.
Oh, yeah, it could be, yeah. Yeah, and it was great fun. It was exciting, and we ate the fish right there. We had a barbecue going. So that's what I brought to outdoors life, basically, and fishing. And then same time, my mom, she's from Graz, which is Steiermark in Austria, and there are a lot of trouts as well. And we did some trout fishing there as well, just very rustic, with self-made hazelnut sticks and a rod. And we were picking blossoms off the fields and hooked them on the hook. And the trouts were just so hungry and just bit on it. So it was quite fun growing up that way.
What were some of the culinary traditions around trout in your childhood?
Yeah, the culinary traditions, again, in Austria, there were also a lot of hatcheries. And when you go there for dinner, they just have the kids fish it out for you from the lakes, and then they fry it for you. And you get a nice potato salad with it. And, you know, we learned how to fillet a cooked trout and things like this. And it's always stuck to me as a very delicious fish.
So that is a question of mine. I mean, when fish is served to you on the bone, how are you supposed to handle that politely at the table?
Yeah. Nowadays, in most restaurants, the fish is coming without the bone, just to make it easy for people and have a better enjoyment. I think when I grew up, the standard was, you know, still being on the bone. And the trout is actually very simple to fillet. There's just a main spine and then a rib cage. And when the fish is cooked properly, it just peels off from the bones quite easily without looking for hidden, you know, bones or something you can choke on.
So how do you prepare the trout dish you serve at Afare?
At Afare, the trout dish, I've never took it off the menu. My menu is very seasonal, changing, but the trout dish was always so popular because I think in Missouri, trout is a big deal too. And I serve it in an almond crust. So I'm seasoning it with salt and white pepper, lemon juice, and then I dip it in an almond crust with a little bit of breadcrumbs, sear it in clarified butter, and cook it crisp and done. And then right now we have local spinach from Carbomer Farm or Mellow Feed Farm in Kansas. And I give with that Yukon bee potatoes, which are always like kind of a new potato. Very great flavor, and then the sauce is a caper beurre blanc, which is a French sauce with wine and butter.
So the almond crusting, Tell me what that does for the trout in particular. That's something that you see with fish a lot. But trout, it seems like it complements trout really nicely.
Yeah, trout has such a mild flavor. And because of its oily content, you can do almost everything with it. You can add herbs, you can add capers, you can add nuts, you can smoke it, you can cook it Chinese way with soy sauce, teriyaki. It's a wonderful fish to have.
And so you choose to do the almond crusting and a caper beurre blanc.
Yes. Yeah, that's very traditional. I'm a traditionalist. I'm a German master chef. And that's how I grew up was in the restaurants. And I just enjoy the flavors and the harmony of it going along. And my customers showed me I'm right with that combination because I never had a need to change it up or anything. People just like it. And I'm offering it as a half portion for an appetizer or as a full trout for a main course.
What are some of the key steps that you take in making that dish?
The key steps is like cleaning the trout properly, then lemon juice, let it marinate in lemon juice a little bit, sea salt, white pepper, very fine breadcrumbs, and some all-natural slivered almonds. And crumble this up, and then you carefully sear it on the almond side because it tends to burn quite quickly. And then you sear it long time on the skin, and the skin is very, very flavorful as well on the trout. And so you want to sear it really, really crispy there.
So you don't want to skip the skin?
No, not on the trout. There's no scales, and it really crisps up, and it's a beautiful addition.
Yeah. What tips do you have for the home cook when it comes to trout in general?
Yeah, I would suggest like cook the whole fish. It keeps all the juices in there. You can also smoke it on your barbecue because of the omega-3 oil in there. So smoking is good at home, grilling, frying, or just quick sauteing because that fish is not very thick on the fillet side, so you can actually do like very flash cooking of it in hot butter or a good olive oil.
In the summertime, I feel like people do kind of forget that you can just toss fish on the grill like
yes.
you do with yes. burgers or steaks or whatever.
Yes.
It is delicious. I mean, for me, I wrap it in foil before I toss it
yes.
on there. What are some of the other techniques?
No, foil is a very good idea because what you can do is you can stuff the trout with some dill and lemon and garlic and ginger. You can rub it. You can add a little bit white wine or vermouth to it. And then you wrap it out, you enclose it. So when you're grilling it, you still get the fried skin, but you keep all the juices and the wine and the flavors, which will intensify the trout. As I said before, it's a very mild fish. It's very, very delicate and delicious. And, you know, any flavor will just, you know, bring it up even more.
You talked a little bit earlier about the traditions around both fishing yes. and eating fish
yeah.
in Germany and Austria.
Yeah.
And I mentioned that I heard a lot that reminds me of the culture around fishing and eating fish mm-hmm. in the Midwest, in the United States. Do you mm-hmm. think, do you see a parallel there in just
yeah.
the culture around this like spring and summertime
yes.
thing that people really enjoy?
Yes. I think trout fishing is very big in Missouri or crappie or bass fishing and all the others. And I don't have enough time to enjoy everything. You know, sometimes when I have half a day off or so, I take my canoe, my kids, and we go on one of the close lakes and we throw out the lines and sometimes we get lucky. It's so relaxing and you know, I wish I had more time for doing it, but I know a lot of people in the Midwest are enjoying fishing out here and there are some really great lakes and streams, especially down south.
You've paired your trout with Yukon Gold potatoes,
yes.
and you talked about growing up with a potato salad
yes.
That yeah. would kind of accompany trout
yeah.
dishes. Is the potato-trout combo sort
yeah.
of special in some way?
Yeah, and the Yukon potato is like a firmer potato, less starchy, And we shape it in a beautiful mushroom shape. And people get sometimes confused. What is that mushroom? No, it's a potato. But these are the things we do in a restaurant. We always want to have people talk about the food, how it tastes or how it looks and what is this. So that's really the fun part of being a chef. And I really enjoy being in Kansas City.
Well, Martin Heuser, thanks for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
Martin serves an almond-crusted trout at his restaurant, A Fair in the Crossroads, and the fishing lakes in Kansas City, Liberty, and Raymore are stocked with rainbow trout. The Missouri Department of Conservation has a hotline you can call for information on when the lakes have been stocked and the numbers on their website. I'm Gina Kaufman. Noodles are next. Stay tuned. Most noodle dishes call the noodles by some other name. Mac and cheese, stroganoff, pad thai, lo mein. But one exception is chicken and noodles. Just chicken and noodles. It's an American comfort dish. But if you're picturing what comes in a can at the grocery store, you may be missing out on the true chicken and noodles experience. So to kick off our noodle search on KCUR Central Standard, we're going to peek inside the kitchen at a local restaurant with its own take on that classic dish. Intern Matt Groby takes us there.
Nestled in a blue building on the south side of 39th Street near the KU Medical Center is Anna's Oven. They specialize in American comfort food.
Chicken noodle, beef stroganoff, lasagna, meatloaf. We make pastries, and cobbler is our really big popular dessert.
That's the front of house manager Elizabeth Stafford. Anna, in case you're wondering, is the name of the owner's grandmother. During the Great Depression, Anna made noodles, soups, stews, breads, and pastries for her friends and family.
We use some of her recipes, like the chicken noodle, here at the restaurant.
According to Elizabeth, chicken and noodles is one of the recipes customers come back for.
A lot of people like to get a side of mashed potatoes to put them underneath.
In the dining room at Anna's Oven, there's local art on one wall and a chalkboard with a beautifully written wine and beer menu. Behind the bar is a rotisserie oven with chickens cooking in full view. These are the chickens used for the chicken and noodles.
My name's Chase, and I'm like a co-head chef here. It's just two main chefs here in the kitchen. The noodles are house-made, so that means we make everything from scratch right here in the kitchen. So you gotta start with the flour and like all the other ingredients for the dough, and you use ice water and you swirl that in the Hobart.
A Hobart is an industrial-sized KitchenAid mixer.
And you'll take that, when that gets done, you'll let it proof for a very little amount of time and use more flour, and you'll run it through our noodle press, which basically like flattens it all out into these strips, and you'll take those and we'll boil them to make the noodles. So it's basically like boiling a huge noodle sheet.
Chase slices the sheet up into the perfect size for a noodle.
You have the chickens, which we slow cook to make the gravy for it, and we use that broth to make the gravy itself, so it's like a chicken bisque. And you also saute some zucchini beforehand.
Then, Chase garnishes the top of the dish with the sauteed zucchini and parsley. Like a lot of people, manager Elizabeth Stafford has a personal connection to this dish.
Well, for me, chicken noodles is definitely a comfort food. My grandmother was a German woman, and that was one of her main stays as dinner dishes was the chicken and noodles. So for me, it's very, very comforting.
That was manager at Anna's Oven talking to our intern, Matt Groby, about their famous chicken and noodles. And now I'm here with the food critics. They're going to guide us on a search for all kinds of noodle dishes throughout the metro. And you can join us at 816-235-2888 with your favorite chow fun, pad thai, mac and cheese. I don't know if dumplings count. I'm Gina Kaufman, and the critics are Charles Ferruza, Mary Block, and Jenny Vergara. Hi, guys.
Good morning.
Hello.
So noodles exist in a lot of different cultures. We heard about this American comfort dish, but there's kind of a debate about who gets credit for originating the noodle. That's primarily an Italy versus China debate.
Although, at least in accepted history, apocryphal or not, Marco Polo brought the Chinese dish noodles to Italy.
Well, there have been archaeological discoveries of ancient bowls that, you know, kind of keep getting predated earlier and earlier on both the Asian continent and the European continent. But
although I believe that a food author, actually in the last 6 or 7 years, did some research on noodles and found the earliest reference to them was in China in the 3rd century, you know, BC. Or is it 8? Whenever that 3rd century happened to be.
A very long time ago.
and the original noodle was, as Martin User would say, it was like spätzle. It was bread dough thrown into boiling water. It was like a dumpling. So really, the connection between dumplings and noodles is accurate.
Well, either way, they do go back a really long time. Yeah. And so let's start with an Italian noodle, a house-made Italian noodle. Mary, talk to me about Michael Smith.
Well, Michael Smith decided he loved Italian so much he was going to just make his restaurant into an Italian restaurant. And it was supposed to be for a year trial period, and now it went so well, he's opening Farina by Michael Smith at the end of the year. But he put on a big pasta section on the menu, and he's churning out wonderful pastas. My current favorite is a bow tie pasta that has Italian sausage, Jimmy Nardello peppers, which are kind of a sweet red pepper, and broccolini with some white beans. And it's just, it's kind of a classic, and it's done really well.
And Jenny, what about for another Italian noodle, 715 in Lawrence with spaghetti? Spaghetti is just what comes right to mind for so many people.
You know, there is a lot of kind of terrible spaghetti that you can find, obviously, at kind of casual dining restaurants. But what's cool about 715 in Lawrence is that from the beginning, they've been breaking down whole animals and obviously making some of their pasta in-house as well. So I feel no guilt whatsoever about recommending something simple like spaghetti and meatballs here, because the pork is heritage pork that they make into meatballs, and then obviously the pasta with just good old red sauce. So it's traditional. It's lovely. It's comforting. Who doesn't love spaghetti and meatballs? I do.
Well, so, and you're recommending that at 715 in Lawrence, but while we are talking about spaghetti OBG at Anthony's. Charles, I grew up on that one.
Oh, me too. I love it's one of my favorite. I didn't grow up on it, but I grew up on variations on that dish in my
OBG, in my oil, butter, garlic.
Right. It's like butter noodles, really.
And preferably with a lot of garlic.
With a lot of garlic,
and,
which I love.
And it needs a lot of cheese on it, too.
Agreed.
And you know what? It's the kind of dish that it doesn't matter how cheap the Parmesan is on top
right.
of it. The noodles really outweigh it. And I wonder if you agree. Spaghetti has really fallen out of fashion lately, and I think it's time for a renaissance. Mm-hmm. Because I had a friend recently, as in yesterday, apologizing to me for his love of spaghetti and meatballs. And didn't we all grow up with that? That's a classic dish.
I know. I'm with you on that.
You know, I mean, yes, like you, I've had horrible variations on it. Mm-hmm. A lot of those restaurants that served horrible variations on it are closed now. But, you know, if you could find a really, really good bowl of spaghetti and meatballs or something like it, that's a great dish. I'm sure Michael Smith must do a version of that.
But I suspect his tomato sauce doesn't come out of a jar.
You know, I don't know. After all these years, Mary, I can tell at first taste whether it's out of a jar or not. It has that kind of acidic bite.
And that's the difference between a good spaghetti with tomato sauce and a not so good one.
Right.
In addition to the noodle itself.
Right.
So for a Chinese noodle, as long as we're going to stick with these two, like,
cultures.
What are considered to be the originating cultures, regardless of where you land on the debate. For a Chinese noodle, Jenny, you are telling us about a chow fun dish at ABC Cafe.
Yeah, you know, ABC Cafe is known for their dim sum, which is fabulous, and you should go and have it immediately. But they also have a couple of noodle dishes on the menu, and I just love the chow fun noodle. It's a rice noodle that's kind of wide and fat and long.
It looks like a tapeworm, actually.
It does look like a tapeworm, and actually, I left dim sum.
We will never, let's just unhear that right now so that we can all continue enjoying this dish.
Well, so to Charles's point, the very first time I ever had dim sum, I was by myself, didn't know anything about dim sum, walked in and was served. So something with the chaffa noodle and walked out because I just didn't know what I was eating. And at that time, you know, this was years and years ago, nobody could really explain what
I was eating.
I mean,
you were a junior in high school. I need to apologize.
Well, anyway, I love them now. So that's the good news, right? And ABC has a great version, obviously, of just a chaffa noodle. You can get it in beef or chicken. And it's just kind of stir-fried, a little some bean sprouts or a little green onion. Delicious. Simple.
And Charles, tell me about the Dan Dan noodles at Bo Ling's.
You know, I just love that name. Whether I do, I mean, I love the noodle too, but that name, Dan Dan.
I know.
What is a Dan Dan noodle?
I knew you were going to ask me that.
Yeah.
Jenny's probably the person to ask because she knows things like that. But isn't a Dan Dan noodle a rice noodle?
Yes, I believe it is.
Okay.
I believe it is.
And it's a delicious, you know, the thing about rice noodles that I really like is they really are absorbent in, you know, in soaking up the sauces. Mm-hmm. They're not just slippery, you know, slimy noodles. And I love Dan Dan. But I love the Dan Dan noodles, the Szechuan Dan Dan noodles at Bo Ling's because of that sesame chili garlic sauce with a little bit of black vinegar. It has a nice bite, you know. I always feel good after I have a meal of that.
So you are recommending Szechuan Dan Dan noodles at Bo Ling's.
Yes.
And Mary, you're also recommending a Dan Dan noodle dish at a ramen shop.
Yes, at Shio Ramen. They have other things besides bowls of ramen on the menu. And they do a great Dan Dan noodle there with Szechuan pepper and sesame paste, toasted peanuts, the chili oil. And they have an option of getting ground pork or jackfruit. So you can get vegan version as well, and it's really great. And on a hot day, to have that kind of hot spice is oddly a wonderful combination. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so back to Italy, tagliatelle. Jenny, you were recommending two tagliatelles, one at Novel and one at Freshwater.
Right. So Freshwater is back open on Southwest Traffic Way, and Calvin Davis there is just doing such a wonderful job. He's really had time to kind of pull that place together. But they have a tagliatelle on the menu right now that is basically handmade. It's got seasonal shoots, wild mushrooms. It's topped with a 63-degree egg that you, when you break it, the yolk basically makes the sauce, and a little bit of cheese on top. And it's just comforting and lovely and fresh and spring-like. I love everything about it. Novel 2 has also opened its reboot in the Crossroads, which is so exciting. Such a beautiful restaurant. Their tagliatelle has a white bolognese sauce, which sounds contradictory because I think we all think of red sauce when we think of bolognese, but this is rich and creamy. It's got a little fresh basil on there. It's got some sweetbreads for if you really want to talk richness, and then lovely fresh Parmesan cheese. It absolutely is fantastic. Probably one of my favorite pasta dishes right now in the city.
We should also say, Gina, that tagliatelle, which is such a beautiful name, it implies that it's kind of a fancy pasta, that it might be a tortellini or a bow tie. Tagliatelle just means to cut. Mm-hmm. So it's a cut pasta, actually not all that different from fettuccine.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. And are they making their pastas in-house at
They are.
Novel?
They are indeed. Yes. In fact, most of the chefs right now, I mean, that's one of the reasons I think we're talking about noodles, is that there's an awful lot of chefs in the city right now with small pasta menus kind of within their main menu. And it's because they're making it in-house and they're really proud of it. It is tough to find, though, what I would call a traditional noodle cut. A lot of them are doing more kind of...
What is a traditional noodle cut?
Well,
like a fettuccine.
A strip. Yeah, yeah, like
or
a strip versus, yeah. You know, right. a dumpling or a tortellini or a ravioli or something that's filled. There's an awful lot of that, too. But we've got great options right now.
And speaking of that, a cavatelli at the Antler Room.
Yes. They are doing...
Cavatelli, that's shells in common parlance.
Yes, exactly. And they're doing it with a braised lamb with pistachio, orange zest, herb yogurt, chili oil. And it's a beautiful dish. And the flash of green... spread over it is really beautiful, and it is just an explosion of flavors in your mouth. They're really doing a great job.
That sounds delicious.
It does sound delicious. It also sounds very Middle Eastern.
Yeah, it does. Yeah,
in a way.
But it doesn't taste like that.
Really?
No.
Well, call 816-235-2888 to tell us about the noodle dish you crave. We're talking about noodles of all kinds here on KCUR's Central Standard with the food critics. 816-235-2888. And Mary, you were saying earlier that you like a hot, spicy noodle on a hot day.
Yes.
But you are also recommending a cold noodle, which might be what some people prefer on a hot day.
Probably true. At Hogshead, during the lunchtime hours, they have a cold Thai noodle salad with rice vermicelli, carrot, cucumber, cilantro, peanut
vinaigrette.
So rice
vermicelli, that's the very thin rice noodles.
Yes, exactly. And it's kind of the classic, you know, peanut vinaigrette. And you can add salmon, which I recommend, or chicken or anything, and make it into an entree.
What other kinds of... Does anyone else have a cold noodle recommendation?
I don't. Not on my list. But yeah, there's an awful... I mean, it is this...
At Vietnamese restaurants.
Yes. And it is the season, obviously, for cold noodle salads. So we should start seeing pasta salads like crazy.
And for the people who do not like the flour noodle for whatever reason, or the rice noodles, people are doing a lot of different things with vegetables. And Mary, you're recommending a beet noodle?
Yes. But it does have flour. I mean, it's a pasta that has beet.
It's not like a zoodle.
No, it's not.
You have to clarify, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Antler Room does one, but the one I wanted to mention because it's on the Rieger's new spring menu is the beet bucatini. And bucatini is like a fat spaghetti noodle that's hollow. And
those are my favorite.
I love the texture bucatini. Of it. Yeah. And this is homemade pasta again. Howard has a nice pasta section on his menu. And so the pasta is made with beets, and then it's all cooked up with guanciale and beet greens, black pepper, lots of Parmesan.
Another one that sounds delicious.
Does that have a real beety taste, Mary?
It does, which I think is a good thing.
Well, beets are kind of earthy. Yeah. They're a little sweet. I mean, I can really see where that would go with a pasta dish.
And we are hearing also about, as long as we were talking about cold pasta dishes, someone's tweeting us about a cold soba noodle at June's.
Yeah. That's a good dish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Soba is buckwheat, mm-hmm. and it makes a really good cold salad.
It's a good Japanese classic noodle, and I haven't ever had a cold noodle dish at June's, but I'm sure they do a great job.
I would think so.
Well, buckwheat noodles cook in a second.
Yeah.
So it's perfect for salad.
And they also, it used to be a really popular thing to put to serve cold sesame noodles. Remember, that was like a trend for a while. Mm-hmm. Does anyone still do that?
I'm sure. Yeah.
I'm sure it's on a menu somewhere. I haven't seen it lately, but that sounds delicious.
Well, we are going to continue our noodle search on KCUR Central Standard in just a minute. You still have time to get in on the conversation. Is there a noodle dish you love or one that you are searching for desperately? Call 816-235-2888 to join this conversation about noodles. I'm Gina Kaufman here with the food critics on KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard. And today the food critics are here to talk about noodles, all kinds of noodles. You might say oodles, but you don't have to. You might. You don't have to. The food critics are Charles Ferruza, Mary Block, and Jenny Vergara. Hi again, you guys.
Hi.
Hello.
We have some callers who want to tell us about noodle dishes here in town, so let's go ahead and turn to them at 816-235-2888. I've got Paula and Miriam on the line. Hi, Paula.
Hi. I wanted to tell you about the Yotiao Chow Fun at Pine and Bamboo Restaurant on Shawnee Mission Parkway. It is, a Chow Fun noodle, like is served in dim sum, filled with different kinds of things. And a yotiao is a crispy fried, sort of like a cruller. It's long and skinny like a churro, but it's not sweet. And so just the texture of this wonderful soft chow fun noodle with the crispy yotiao inside is a wonderful bite.
Wow, that sounds awesome. Paula, is this a dish that you've had elsewhere or just at this Pine and Bamboo restaurant?
That is the only place I've ever seen it. Yotiao is a common dish in northern China that people eat for breakfast with like soy milk.
But it's not sweet.
It's not what?
It's not sweet, because you're comparing it to like a churro, but you're saying it's not sweet.
Well, I'm just kind of trying to describe, it's the way a churro is sort of forced out of a tube or something. it's shaped like that.
Huh.
And it's real crispy on the outside, but it's just a plain wheat dough.
Well, thank you, Paula, for that recommendation.
You're welcome.
Has anyone heard of this before?
I am struggling to wrap my head around what this is.
I want to go now and have some. I do love pine and bamboo. So, you know, it's a historic
Kansas
City restaurant.
Dough that is expressed and sounds like fried crispy, wrapped in a wide rice noodle. Right?
Mm. That's what it sounds like.
I'll have the Long John with the noodles on it.
I'll have the churro, please. Yeah. The chaffin churro.
Well, let's hear from Pat. Pat's calling us. Good morning.
Good morning. I was wondering if anybody knows a place that has Cantonese pan-fried noodles.
That's Pine and Bamboo might actually be one of those places that have that. I haven't seen pan-fried noodles on a menu in a long time.
Yeah.
But
I went.
Oh, you went to Pine and Bamboo? They didn't have it?
Well, at that point, I mean, you know, there's times that they'll say they have, you know, noodles or something like that. But the ones we had in Chicago at Chinatown were noodles that had been already kind of cooked, but they weren't overly wet. And then they're fried, and they have, they're almost, parts of them are toasted, like, in that. And then they have sauce. They had it with Chinese broccoli and chicken with the
Can I ask, have you tried I'm going to throw out two old school Chinese restaurants. One is Prince's Garden. The other is in old downtown Overland Park. What am I thinking of here?
Dragon Inn.
They tend to have those old school kind of dishes, of which this sounds.
I go to Prince's Dragon Inn, and I haven't. They had something on there that I tried that it still wasn't what I was looking for. Okay.
Well,
I haven't been to Prince's Garden. Isn't that over on
Warnell?
Yes.
Yeah, Waldo.
Well, thanks, Pat, for that call. Maybe we'll be able to answer this question by the end of the show, but if not, we'll keep working on it for you, okay?
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you. I do want to switch gears a little bit right now to ramen. We have not talked about ramen yet, and that's a big noodle trend everywhere, including here right now. It's not new. It's not a new dish. It's just maybe more of a new trend.
Oh, Gina, we should say that the ramen noodle restaurants, and I had to be educated in this myself, because the word ramen actually gives me the heebie-jeebies, because of when I was poor and in college, you know, ramen was in the cellophane packages were like all I could afford. This is not that kind of ramen.
Not at all. My favorite place to get ramen is at Columbus Park Ramen Shop, which is Josh and Abby Jo Ian's place next to Happy Gillis. Any of the ramens that they have on the menu are great, but my favorite is the kimchi ramen, because I love spicy food. And it's got a chicken broth with kimchi. It's got a Chinese-style pork sausage, house kimchi, an egg, scallion. You can do a chili bomb on it. And it's
a chili bomb?
Yeah, just to add a little extra spice.
Mary does the chili bomb, guys. I know she does.
I do, indeed.
You say it like it's the cannonball or something. do a chili bomb.
Just go ahead and do one.
Yeah. But the other thing that at this time of year especially, I'm sure they'll have noodle dishes on the menu that are brothless. So it could be cold and just noodles.
I've had some of the variations there. They're always good. They're always fresh, really creative. I had a coconut broth one that was chilled at one point. Delicious.
So this is at Columbus Park Ramen Shop.
Yes.
And we have a caller who wants to recommend another ramen shop. Casey in Kansas City, good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to recommend Shio Ramen Shop. It's on, I believe, 36th and Broadway. The chef, Pat Curtis, I think Shio means salt in Japanese. But one thing that sets that place apart is he actually makes the noodles in-house.
Right.
And they're amazing. So for people that have had ramen like in a package before and they're kind of leery about eating ramen, I would say the difference is like if you had dried pasta and then you've had fresh pasta at an Italian place. You know, just a huge world of difference. So the same would be said for Pat's noodles at Chio. By making them in-house, I mean, it's just you can't really compare them to, you know, ramen out of a cellophane package.
Well, so, and tell me more about your favorite dish at Chio Ramen.
I normally get the shoyu, which is a blend of different kind of like soy sauces. The broth is really dark and salty, but it's just so satisfying. And, you know, he has a bunch of different things. Like he'll do poke bowls in the summer when it's hot, and he'll do curries and all kinds of different stuff. But I always go back to the shoyu, so that's probably my favorite.
Well, thanks, Casey. And Jenny, you are recommending, I'm not sure whether it's the same dish, but you're certainly recommending something at this ramen shop.
I just recommended the Chio Ramen, which is basically that what the restaurant's named after. I think you always should start there when you're trying a new restaurant. But Patrick absolutely is the only person in Kansas City right now who has the traditional ramen machine and is truly making his pasta in-house. And I think that's something that really should be highlighted because the caller's right. The difference between, you know, a dried pasta and a fresh pasta is like night and day. Not to say the other ramen shops aren't using high quality. They're bringing in Sun noodles, obviously, from New York and Chicago, which is a wonderful, fabulous noodle as well. But to make them in-house, that's a lot of love there.
Well, so aside from love, can we explore the difference between an in-house noodle and other noodles? Because we're getting a tweet from a listener who says, maybe I have a primitive palate, but all pasta tastes the same to me. What's the difference between them other than shape?
Well, I mean, different flours can lead different textures and flavors. So buckwheat tastes different versus a wheat noodle versus a rice noodle.
Versus a sobo noodle,
yeah.
Which is...
So I think it just depends on the flour that's actually used.
And I would say the shape isn't an inconsequential difference on some level because when you're cooking pasta and eating pasta, really, it's how the thickness of it determines a lot about the texture and the shape will determine a lot about how it absorbs the sauce and how it carries the sauce. And that does affect the experience of eating it.
Chefs are very deliberate about what shapes go with what sauces for that reason. If you've got a shell or something and you want the sauces to get in all the crevices, that's much better than if you've got a long, thin noodle.
Right, like angel hair pasta to me. I mean, if a really good chef is making it, that's one thing, but angel hair pasta tends to clump together really quickly, mm-hmm. and it's just a clump.
Mm-hmm. But that is the pasta for if you're really, really hungry, because there's like no air between the noodles and the folds. So if you have a bowl of angel hair pasta, I feel like that's more pasta per square centimeter.
That's a really good way of looking at that. Really positive.
Well, I think, too, it has something to do with the fact that fresh pasta, you do taste the difference. And if you're just eating kind of dried pasta. And can I just make a distinction between traditional just dried pasta that you get at the grocery store versus Italian imported dried pasta? There is a world of difference, even in those two genres of flavor, texture, freshness.
Well, Italian pastas tend to use a finer flour.
So if we have someone who thinks that all pasta tastes the same, I would say try fresh pasta. Try some different fresh pastas. You'll be surprised. It's a world of difference.
A pasta taste test.
Yes.
I'm in.
Okay. Well, we also have not talked about pad thai, and I see a lot of pad thais on everyone's mm-hmm. list. So let's dive in on pad thais. Jenny, do you want to start us off?
So I am recommending a Thai restaurant that has one location up in Lee's Summit called Mali Thai Bistro, who's getting ready to open a second location in the former Pizza Bella location in the Crossroads. It's going to be called Barami Thai Bistro. So it's a different name, but same owners, same chef. And they have some wonderful Thai dishes. I actually had a chance to go up to Lee Summit to interview them and had a chance to taste their pad thai, which is delicious and traditional. But they have a dish I want to call out because they think it's going to be a real hero in the Crossroads. This is for the caller who wanted crispy noodles. These noodles are pan-fried crispy. I mean, they like shatteringly crispy. But it's so interesting. I've never seen anything like it. The dish, and I'm sorry, I'm going to butcher this. It's Radna Talay, is I believe how you say it. It's a Thai dish. It's very traditional in Thailand. It's almost like comfort food, silly, traditional. We don't see a lot of it here. I haven't seen it for sure. But it's either crispy rice or egg noodles. In this case, I believe it's egg noodles that are fried really crisp, you know, pan fried until they're just really crunchy. And then it's topped with this kind of seafood gravy in this case, which has vegetables as well. So it's like fresh vegetables like bok choy and broccoli. And the sauce is kind of brown and thick, almost like a gravy with pieces of shrimp and squid and different things in it. Oh my gosh, so interesting. When that sauce hits the noodles start to soften and become really chewy. I'm telling you, this place is going to be really good. So be on the lookout. The Barami Thai Bistro will be opening in June in the Crossroads.
And so Pad Thai as a dish, which is not what you were just talking about, mm-hmm. and we're going to get to some of those, but it's become very common in Kansas City and throughout the United States. But for people who maybe haven't tried it, what is Pad Thai?
Well, it's my favorite Thai dish.
Well, it's the signature Thai dish.
It is the signature Thai dish. It's made with a tamarind paste. And it's just
And rice noodles, right?
Yep. And it can have chicken, shrimp.
Tofu.
Tofu. And it's really flavorful. Most Thai restaurants let you order it mild, medium, or hot. And the one that was kind of started it all in Kansas City was the original Thai place, I think. And I like, there are a couple that I really enjoy now. One is at Hot Basil, and that was the former chef of Thai place out in Overland Park. And then also Coco Thai in the Crossroads. And they're really good renditions. I don't like it when it gets too sweet. Mm-hmm. And this has the right balance.
I'm hearing a lot of buzz about Coco Thai,
yeah,
which I think is interesting.
Actually, I think the for years, the most famous Pad Thai in the city was Bangkok Pavilion on Metcalf.
Oh, right.
Which preceded the Thai place. And, you know, that tamarind paste that they use for the sauce, it's sweet and salty and spicy at once.
Right.
Sour, a little sour.
A little sour. Mm-hmm. And it's just, and the chopped peanuts on it, just, it's a wonderful textural dish. It's just soft. It's got everything you need for a perfect
dish. Did we invent
dish.
Pad Thai here in the U.S.?
No, believe it or not. Oh,
I'm so glad.
I think we invented the Thai pizza, if you remember.
Yes. Okay. We'll take credit for that.
Charles, you are recommending a Pad Thai at Thai House?
Yeah, on Holmes, which is sometimes a restaurant I forget about because it's not really in my neighborhood. But the Thai food there is quite good, and their Pad Thai is really classic. I mean, they don't deviate much from the way you will find it just about anywhere. And the noodles are perfect, and the service is good, and it's a plentiful dish. You can never finish a whole order.
Mm-hmm. We have someone on Twitter asking us where you can get Malaysian laksa other than the Malay Cafe. And first of all, can anyone explain what Malaysian laksa is? I can't, but
I will say this. I don't know how much like Malaysian laksa? Is, but even Bo Ling's has its own Malaysian noodle dish mm-hmm. that may be close to that. I've never ordered it, but the Malaysian noodles are actually becoming a big thing now. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Well, we have so many good Asian markets now that I'm sure you could probably find some there too.
Who wants to make it on their own?
Oh, I don't know.
I'm too lazy. I'm too lazy to make ravioli out of a can.
There's also, I tried at a Nepali restaurant out of town once a dish called thukpa, and that is a noodle-y soup dish. I haven't found that in Kansas City. They do have it in Lawrence at Zen Zero, but I haven't found it anywhere in Kansas City.
Zen Zero is a good place, too, yeah.
So aside from those calls, let's get back to you guys' recommendations. Let's see here. Jenny, tell me about the Brass Onion.
So I'm trying to be citywide with my recommendations today, and I have to throw out Brass Onion. It's become
the
kind
brass
of...
Brass Onion?
Mm-hmm. Right. So it's out in Prairie Fire, And basically, the Brancato family owns this restaurant. And they have kind of an interesting Southern comfort menu, but they have a fettuccine carbonara on their menu, which is like breakfast pasta. I mean, it's got this beautiful egg sauce that's made with cream. It's got smoked bacon. It's got lots of cheese and, you know, rich noodles. And so if you're really interested in, like, the breakfast noodle experience, this is the dish to get. So I like it. It's comforting. It's creamy.
The breakfast noodle experience.
Why not?
If I remember, though.
And I've got a T-shirt that says that now.
Carbonara, traditional carbonara has no cream in it.
It can't. Right. Traditional does not. They do, I think, use a little cream. But some people.
They know their audience.
Well. Come on. Yeah, well, I won't say that, but.
Charles, you are also recommending a couple more Italian restaurants that we haven't talked about. Jasper's and Italian Delight for their noodles.
Italian Delight I love because, you know, you will never find a more economical pasta dish in Kansas City. They have great meatloaf. I mean, meatloaf. I'm loose. Great
lasagna.
Lasagna, thank you. I must have been thinking
close. Of
shame. Yeah.
Mary, I'm impressed.
And Jasper's, I love their Marco Polo Italian dinner because you get your own choice of. You get to pick your own choice of pasta between fettuccine, angel hair spaghetti, linguine, penne, my least favorite pasta, or rigatoni. And there's something kind of like a childhood dream to be able to order your own specific kind of pasta with meatballs or meat sauce.
Yeah, like it takes you back a little to getting the soup with the alphabet noodles instead of just the regular ones.
I still use that. I still have that soup. Yeah.
And Mary, you're recommending a couple more Italian restaurants as well that we haven't talked about in Brookside.
Yes. Bella Napoli is a longtime favorite. They do pasta really well. The Amatriciana is my favorite. It's made with rigatoni, pancetta, garlic, and a spicy tomato sauce. And I love that one. If you go down the street to Carmen's Cafe, another old school one, they have a huge pasta list. And I like the linguine fra diavolo with lots of seafood, spicy tomato sauce, which I always ask for more spice to it, shrimp and mussels and clams and squid. And you can count on leftovers the next day for sure.
And, you know, so as long as you're talking about pasta with seafood, Jenny, we talked about Michael Smith earlier, but what you in particular are recommending there is linguine al vongole. That's with clams, right?
Right. Just simple linguine and clams.
Are they fresh clams or out of a can?
Oh, I believe they're fresh.
At Michael's?
Yeah.
They're fresh.
Look at Mary's eyebrow. She just gave you the side eye, Charles.
She always does.
But the noodle seafood combination, talk to me about it. Like, is there a way to do it right and wrong?
I don't think there's right and wrong. There's a lot of people that would tell you that seafood, I think actually Jasper and I had a conversation about this years ago, about pasta dishes with seafood shouldn't have cheese
right.
anywhere near them, I think is.
Or even cream.
But, I think the rules, it's like white after Labor Day. I think all that goes out the window at some point. But
good, because I'm wearing white today. We're getting some tweets. We are getting a recommendation for Sweet Siam in Westport. One of our listeners is telling us that they have the best pad thai in town, hands down.
They have really, really good pad thai.
Tell me about that place.
At Sweet Siam. I like Sweet Siam. You know, I believe it's moved a couple times.
Well, and this is where the old Thai place used to be.
Right, right.
In Westport.
Yes.
And like I said, pad thai is a great textural dish. You know, the soft and the sweet and the crunchy and the...
it's all about getting that balance right.
Yeah. And Sweet Siam... Which, by the way, the last time I was there, I had the best piece. This is another show, but the best piece of coconut cake I've ever had in my life. Mm. But the pasta there, the pad thai there is pretty perfect. So just go with that and run.
Okay. We are also getting a tweet about the noodles that are beneath the ginger basil chicken at Blue Koi.
Oh, that's a great dish, too.
Yeah.
But Blue Koi, and that is... A noodle shop, technically, right?
Yes, it is. It actually has noodles in the name.
Mm-hmm. And dumplings.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, both those things.
And so the noodle selection there, I would guess, is pretty good.
Yeah, they've always had really good noodle dishes, and the dumplings as well.
And I like that most dishes you can order rice or noodles.
That's right.
Well, our time is up, but you will be able to get our critics' recommendations for great noodle dishes on local menus at kcur.org/centralstandard later today. We'll have that ready in time for your weekend adventures. And if you follow KCUR on Facebook or Twitter, that list will come right to you. Mary Block, blogging at Around the Block, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Jenny Vergara of Feast Magazine, thank you.
Thank you.
And Charles Frusa is our longtime food critic here on KCUR's Central Standard. Charles, it's been fun.
Listen, I love being the geriatric panelist. Thank you.
No, the anchor.
Okay.
But you can talk to us on Twitter anytime, even though our week is up here on the show. We are at KCURCST, and we are curious about your T-shirts. If you can chart your own personal history through the T-shirts in your closet, tweet us your story, at KCURCST. This show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Coy Duggar, and Suzanne Hogan, with help from intern Matt Groby. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day, and our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. I'm Gina Kaufman.